Yeah, exactly.
Of Ways and Means on the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for April 5th, 2017. Welcome. We have quite a bit to go through, so we're going to try to move along as quickly as we possibly can. First of all, we're going to open a public hearing, continue opening a public hearing on 5519, and I think we have still a little bit for folks to give us in terms of information about the Oregon Department of Forestry.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick and members of the committee. For the record, I am Peter Doherty, Oregon State Forester and Director of the Department of Forestry. As we have discussed earlier, 60% of Oregon's forests are federally owned, primarily managed by the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management. In eastern Oregon, the largest single business entity is the Forest Service. How and when the agency offers work has significant impact for Oregon contractors in rural communities. Over the past two biennia, we have been implementing a federal forest restoration program, and the governor's budget proposes to make this program a permanent part of our budget. The federal restoration program is rooted in work initiated by the Board of Forestry. In 2008, the board created a Federal Forest Advisory Committee to examine the role Oregon could play in accelerating restoration on federal lands. In 2009, the committee recommended that the state develop a federal forest liaison program with state funds. And in 2012, a subcommittee took that recommendation a step further to scope out the components of a state program. Still, the question remains, why invest state dollars on a responsibility of the federal government? In short, the conditions on federal forest and their impact on local communities compel us to act to change outcomes. When wildfire or insect outbreaks occur, they don't stop at property boundaries without intervention. Intervention costs the state real dollars in fire suppression, resource loss, and opportunities for rural communities. Our top priority mission is to provide fire protection on 16.2 million acres, and two recent reports have linked our federal forest restoration work with this mission. Following the consecutive intense fire seasons in 2013 through 2015, our protection division convened landowners, agency partners, and members of the legislature to conduct a fire program review. One recommendation was to encourage the legislature to support the state's financial interest to continue the pace, scale, and quality of federal forest restoration. The recommendation included federal funds spending limitations to implement good neighbor authority projects. On a similar timeline, the Secretary of State conducted an audit of our fire protection division. One of the 13 recommendations was for the department to increase its proactive wildfire mitigation efforts on both public and private lands. The audit specifically highlights the work of our federal forest restoration program as critical to getting ahead of wildfires. Beyond the economic and ecological arguments, Oregon's home to 28 collaborative groups. These locally led grassroots efforts build common ground for restoration treatments. These local groups embody the Oregon way, creating local solutions to complex natural resource problems. As a graph on my next slide will show, collaboration is working in Oregon. These charts document trends of several forest management metrics in eastern Oregon. I want to be clear, these are not solely results of the state investments. Getting projects through the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA process, is key to increased restoration on the ground. Collaboration intersects with NEPA by providing the forest service input on the front end of project development. As shown in the upper left chart, the total annual average acres, say that fast three times, of signed NEPA decisions was 45% greater for 2012 through 2015 compared to 2009 through 2011. The dark purple portions of the bar represent the acres that receive significant input from local collaboratives. To date, none of the collaborative projects have been litigated. The lower right chart shows the volume sold annually by the Forest Service. The dark blue portion of the bar is saw timber, raw material of the forest sector. More saw timber volume has been sold since 2012. The good news here is that logs are on trucks and headed to the mills, supporting traditional economies in our rural communities. Now that we've looked at trend lines, I thought we should take a breath and see what we're actually trying to accomplish on the ground. This is a picture of a fuels reduction treatment in the Sisters area.
Yeah.
Yes. Representative Esco.
Could you back up a slide and tell me the difference between your small tree? I mean, it said what, small diameter versus saw timber. What does that mean?
So saw timber has usually for most mills has a merchantability limit, a minimum diameter, often around 8 inches, up to a certain height for a minimum diameter at the top. And so if a tree is smaller than that, you can't cut it into boards.
Is that DBH?
Well, DBH at 4.5 feet from the ground.
Right.
And then the top diameter, you know, maybe at 16 feet is usually the length they want for a log.
So it's 8 inches and above.
Yeah, it varies depending on where you are and what the mill needs.
Thank you.
Darn plywood managers anyways.
They had a small log mill too.
In 2013, the state legislature did what we do best in Oregon, lead on creative solutions to challenging problems. My state forester colleagues around the West are beginning to advocate for similar programs in their own states. I want to emphasize that this program is not new work. We've been implementing our program for 4 years now with real results. But there are two significant differences in the request this year. We propose to make this work a permanent program, allowing us to plan larger, longer-term projects with the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management. And then second, we've asked for $1.5 million in federal funds and other fund limitations tied to opportunities under good neighbor authority. Our ability to act on good neighbor authority is linked to having a permanent program. Under Good Neighbor, we'll be implementing projects that span the state's biennium. I cannot commit to doing work with the Forest Service without the assurance that I will have the people to do the job. And I don't want to create expectations in rural Oregon that I can't keep. But across the West and in D.C., our federal forest restoration program is commonly referred to as the Oregon model. It has three components. Within our collaborative support component, OWEB implements a competitive grant program to provide funds for critical functions such as facilitation to help collaborative groups build agreement for active treatments. The goal of this piece is to increase scale. The implementation partnership includes strategic investments at the project level by either collecting data necessary for project level planning or providing state employed seasonal workforce to prepare treatment units for sale or contracting. The goal of this piece is to increase the quality and reduce cost. And under the Good Neighbor Authority, the state can act as an agent to the Secretary of Agriculture to implement actions on federal lands. We can implement these actions using contractors or with our own workforce. The goal of this piece is to increase pace. The program has taken a systems approach rather than a project-based approach. Rather than investing in one project from start to finish, We are investing in pieces of the planning and pre-sale process to find cost and time efficiencies. Our approach focuses on changing how the agencies do business within the existing policy framework. As a result of this approach, we've invested in a lot of projects. We have 21 data collection contracts, ranging from stand exams to sensitive plant surveys. ODF crews have assisted with layout on 54 federal timber sales. In total, we have investments on all 11 national forests in the state and four of the five BLM districts. We are committed to tracking results and have contracted with the University of Oregon to monitor the impacts of this biennium state investment, and we expect that report in June. This graph is a snapshot of our commitments in the current biennium to support collaborative groups and federal partnerships. Approximately $1 million of the funds have been used to support Oregon collaborative groups. $3.5 million have been invested in a combination of data collection and pre-sale layout activities. This biennium, the legislature asked ODF to expand our program statewide. Roughly 75% of this biennium's funds are in play in Eastern Oregon, and we've invested 25% in Western Oregon. Our approach on the west side is following a similar path as we took on the east side in the first 2 years of this program. Our investments have increased the readiness on the west side as a result. To ramp up opportunities on the west side, we will have to meet collaborative groups where they are in terms of restoration needs. This means expanding our view of why to do restoration work and to include water quality and fish habitat as restoration goals. Now I'm going to discuss a few examples of the types of projects that have received state investment and some of the geographic scopes of the project. This map shows all the collaborative groups that have been awarded state funds, and you can see they're all around the states. The Deschutes Forest Collaborative used state funds to...
Question?
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's all right.
I was wondering what the time frame is on these grants. Is it the last biennium or several or since the perms were initiated?
So, Chair Frederick, for the record, this my name is Chad Davis. I work at the department and am the Partnership and Planning Director for the Department of Forestry. To your question, Representative Power, this map shows all collaborative groups that have received funding in this biennium. We have run three grant cycles, and I can go into more detail if you want. We've run three different grant cycles, all of which have different time frames associated with that. But for the work is to be done in this biennium. So most of these close in June or September of this year.
The Deschutes Collaborative used state funds to up their game, building on trust from projects on ponderosa pine stands to start addressing issues on more complex mixed conifer stands. The Southern Willamette Forest Collaborative used our funds to develop the first stewardship contract on the Willamette National Forest. In 2015, as I described in the fire presentation, the Canyon Creek Fire burned through the Malheur National Forest. After the fire crews went home, the forest staff and the local collaborative group began to discuss potential salvage operations. The Forest Service proposed to use state funds to gather LIDAR imagery for the salvage cell in a research project. We used funds to contract with Dogami to collect and analyze the LIDAR imagery in support of this project. This commitment of state resources helped the salvage project proceed on an expedited pathway. The project is now complete. That's less than 17 months after the fire was put out. As a result, 4 million board feet went to the local mill in John Day. And I'll ask you, when was the last time you heard a salvage sale happening this quickly? ODF also extends our seasonal fire.
How many board feet did you get out of that salvage?
4 million.
4 million? Thank you. Very good. Very well done.
ODF extended our seasonal firefighters to work side by side with federal employees to mark unit boundaries and trees to prepare timber sales. ODF has committed $1.2 million for this component of restoration. As I mentioned earlier, we've worked on 54 timber sales statewide. The next phase of our program is to expand our work using the Good Neighbor Authority, or GNA. The Good Neighbor Authority was included in the 2014 Farm Bill and is given permanent authorization by Congress. I take this as a signal that GNA is a new way to do business and not a program that will disappear anytime soon. There are three things I want to emphasize about GNA. First, the Forest Service still makes all decisions and are responsible for satisfying all environmental laws, such as the Endangered Species Act. Second, under GNA projects, the Forest Service transfers federal funds to the state for implementation. I've already mentioned that federal funds limitations with the program, that limitation specifically for GNA projects. And third, when ODF contracts work or administers a timber sale on federal lands, we use state procurement policy and labor laws. This approach should improve efficiency by lowering cost. ODF has three project agreements under the GNA. The first two are on the Fremont-Wainema in Klamath and Lake Counties. The Crooked Mud Honey Project will use a combination of contractors and ODF seasonal employees to remove trees that don't have a market outlet. The timber sale work on the Blue Jay is very similar that we've done, the work we've done with state funds, but in this case, the Forest Service is paying ODF to do the work on this sale to the tune of $100,000. Lastly, state investments allowed us to put coordinators in LeGrand, Pendleton, and Klamath Falls. These individuals implement projects funded with state dollars and identify and develop GNA projects. The Forest Service has committed to funding these positions 50-50 with us. In total, the Forest Service has transferred $420,000 of funds to ODF for these three projects. The exciting opportunity with Good Neighbor is to conduct timber sales and use the revenue to fund additional restoration work. Our Klamath Lake District is working with the Fremont-Wainema National Forest to develop a GNA project on Paddock Butte. We've invested $220,000 in the current biennium to seed this project. On this project, ODF will implement a federal timber sale using state procurement laws that we use in managing our state forest. Revenue from the federal timber will be used to recoup our costs to administer the timber sale. ODF can also use the timber revenue to contract the removal of non-commercial trees and the removal of juniper trees. The treatment on federal lands will complement work that ODF is currently doing with the adjacent private landowner using cost share money from the Natural Resource Conservation Service. This is a true example of working across ownership boundaries to address forest health and fire risk at the appropriate scale.
Just a second, if you wouldn't mind. I'm just curious about where that is. I can't place that in the map, so tell me where we are.
In Klamath Lake.
Okay. Good deal. Thank you.
Did I get that right?
I'm particularly interested in the juniper removal. Where is that taking place?
So, Chair Frederick, that project there is actually in northern Klamath County, and the juniper removal will take place on both the private side of the line and on the public side of the line. Just depends on which source of money that we are using to do that. So. It's obviously on the lower kind of elevation profile of the butte there, where the juniper is encroaching into the pine stands.
Thank you.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Are we selling this for a manufacturing facility on the juniper part, or are we just going to chop it up for firewood, or what are we going to do with it?
Chair Frederick, Representative Esquivel, that is something that our local field foresters are evaluating and working on the private side with the private landowners. And for those where there are market opportunities, we will absolutely try to market that wood for a small business there and probably in Klamath County.
Thank you. Let me continue that a bit, though. I'm actually curious about whether we've taken other steps and to find easier ways to deal with juniper. The wood really nails the saws and other things over there. So I was wondering whether we've come up with any other approaches, any other ways to deal with that. Is there something new or on the horizon, or is anyone thinking about it at this point?
Senator Frederick, yeah, we're just starting a project where we're looking at biochar and the opportunity to expand the use of juniper in the biochar market, but that's really at the very beginning stages. We have a grant to do that work under our biomass program.
Thank you.
I'll finish this topic by looking ahead to the next stage of the federal restoration program. As the governor proposed, we intend to make this work a permanent part of ODF business. This approach is connected to the Good Neighbor Authority. At the end of the day, we need staff to implement GNA projects. Without this investment, we don't have the capacity to take on Good Neighbor Authority. Our federal partners, the U.S. Forest Service and Natural Resource Conservation Service, in particular, are promoting an all-hands, all-lands approach. We have used federal funds to help private landowners conduct fuel reduction treatments. It makes sense to link our federal program with this work and to implement treatments on both sides of property lines. We've also learned this biennium that collaboratively driven restoration on the west side of Oregon is more expansive than just reducing fire risk. If we're going to maintain the statewide scope of this program, we'll need to expand our focus to include water quality and fish habitat improvements on west side projects in mixed ownership watersheds. So to summarize, the governor's budget includes $4.4 million of lottery funds and $1.5 million of federal funds limitations to implement Good Neighbor Authority. It makes our federal forest restoration program part of our base budget. And with that, that ends our federal forest presentation.
Any further questions regarding federal forests? No? Thank you.
Well, we've covered a lot of territory in the last 3 days, and I hope you've seen how ODF has a diverse yet integrated set of businesses that have evolved over time based on science, policy, public expectation, and available resources. And that the Oregon's investment in the department produces real, meaningful, and cost-effective services and benefits for all Oregonians. Hopefully, we articulated two principles that guide our work. First, healthy forests are vital to our state and to Oregonians. And second, public investment is critical to keeping forests healthy and working. In this challenging budget cycle, the governor's budget makes tough strategic choices. Governor Brown stressed the importance of investments that create opportunities for people from underserved communities, such as Oregon's rural economies. The economic recovery has left many rural communities behind. For ODF, the governor's budget adds about $5.1 million in enhancements on top of the $6 million for the special purpose appropriation. It also includes about a $5.4 million or 8% general fund reduction to our current service level. In reality, this budget reduces service in most all of the programs we are delivering this biennium, including our work with rangeland protection associations and on federal forest restoration. To summarize the key themes of the budget, fire protection is our highest priority mission. We use a highly functional, complete, and coordinated fire protection system. Strong partnerships are the cornerstone of this system with landowners, operators, and contractors foundational to our success. The governor's budget recognizes its value. It fully funds the state's portion of the critical severity resources and the unique fire insurance policy. It provides additional aviation capacity to manage the department's 30 aviation resources. It funds our base fire level protection. It funds our base level of fire protection with a reduction of 33 or 5% of our seasonal firefighters. And it continues our support of Rangeland Protection Association's work protecting rangeland health and sage grouse habitat with at a 45% reduction. This program helps maintain an important way of life in rural Oregon. The governor budget continues our federal restoration program with a 12% reduction and makes it a permanent part of our base budget. This program, as I mentioned, is linked to our fire protection mission by proactively reducing the fuels on federal forest to reduce the risk of catastrophic fires. It supports local collaborative efforts that give rural communities a real voice in the management of federal forest. It also establishes ODF as an implementation partner under Good Neighbor Authority, expanding opportunities to contribute to rural economies. Our State Forest Division delivers sustainable timber harvests that provide jobs for local communities and generate significant revenues for the 15 counties that contain state forest lands. It provides habitat for native fish, wildlife, and a wealth of recreation and education opportunities. The governor's budget continues the funding structure for the State Forest Division with no public funding for the provision of public benefits. Given our financial challenges, we are planning for organizational changes that will result in a reduction in workforce in the next fiscal year. Our private forest divisions work with landowners to help them meet their objectives while protecting natural resources. We enforce the Forest Practice Act, monitor and protect forest health, provide family forest land assistance, and support urban and community forestry. The governor's budget includes significant reductions in our private forest divisions. The reductions eliminate 9 stewardship foresters, or 18%, who are our boots on the ground and contribute directly to our firefighting workforce. It eliminates 10 positions that provide technical assistance on forest health, forest practice, biomass, and the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watershed. We are also reducing our forest practice compliance audit and eliminating funding for the Trask Watershed Study. Our Administrative Services Division supports all the agency key business functions, and they provide accountability and efficiency. The governor's budget also includes reductions in administration, including temporary employees, training, and the replacement of IT equipment, areas in which we are already challenged. It also includes debt financing to restore the State Forester's office building in Salem and to finance a joint co-location project with ODOT for our Toledo facilities. Because of our militia approach to fire, any reductions in our agency, either in fire, state forest, private forest, or administration, has real impact on our top priority mission. As recognized in the Fire Program Review and the Secretary of State audit, we are currently not a sustainable fire organization if fire seasons continue as they have over the last decade. We are experiencing increasingly complex fire conditions and will have to work with our partners to evolve our fire protection system. As I think you can tell, I am very proud of the practical, partnership-seeking, can-do culture that defines over a century of service. At its core, ODF is a family of dedicated public servants who care deeply about Oregon's forests. On behalf of our family and the Board of Forestry, I thank you for your focus on our work.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Vasquez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm interpreting that we are going to spend money to do the work that the Forest Service should be doing in the first place with cleaning up their own forests. Is that correct?
Senator, Representative Esquivel, yes. We are partnering with the Forest Service to increase the pace and scale of treatments on federal lands.
A job that they should be in charge of in the first place.
It's been argued that it is their responsibility. It's also been argued that we share a portion of those forests, and those are part of Oregon's forest land base.
Except that we don't manage them.
I think we are beginning to manage them in a new, unique way that breaks down that distinction about who should own federal land. Should they be federally owned or should they be turned over to the state? We're in Oregon, we're creating a new partnership where Oregon and the Forest Service are working together to manage those lands with really viable local community input and a focus on local economies, which is pretty unique anywhere in the United States, the kind of commitment we're getting and the focus on developing rural economies.
Follow up?
Yes, go ahead.
And then we're also reducing our staff for firefighting substantially.
Overall, the governor's recommended budget decreases us about 14 positions net. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lewis, did you have a question?
Oh, okay. I do.
Oh, yes, Senator Gerard.
It's a real quick question, and you touched on it, but I still was kind of curious about it. We clear out underbrush, we thin, we take out juniper. Are we doing anything with mobile cogeneration plant technology, or has that come into play at all?
Senator Gerard, I don't know if we actually have used mobile cogeneration plant, but our biomass program has been developing a lot of in-place biomass heating facilities and cogeneration facilities.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Now, I need to have an announcement regarding the public testimony. Several things. We have about 20 people signed up right now to speak, and we have 1 hour, less than an hour, for folks to do that. So we're going to time folks to try to get people through if possible. Having said that, we also have, so we may have some additional testimony possibly the week after next, because there are a number of people who could not make it here in this particular time, and there are lots of folks who want to testify and want to speak to this. I'm going to call forward first to three people who have indicated that they are, they've been here they've come more than 100 miles first. And do I need to have Kathy?
Yes.
Oh, before you go, Kathy.
Okay.
Thank you. Before we start the public testimony, I do need to have Kathy Conley from the from DAS give a presentation as well. Just, it'll be probably a brief one, knowing the way that they usually do that.
So.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I'm Kathy Conley with DAS Chief Financial Office. Here to give you a brief overview of the governor's budget. The agency's done a great job of identifying its emerging issues. This is the expenditure history slide. As you see, general fund and other funds is quite volatile in this agency, and it's pretty much tied to their firefighting. The agency's discussed with you their structure, the current structure for how they fight fires, and I would just emphasize that under the structure going forward in 17-19, the general fund is solely responsible if large fire costs exceed $20 million but are less than $50 million. It also appears to be responsible if costs exceed $75 million in a single fire year. Agencies already talked with you about how they spend their money and where in their agency it goes. Revenue history is slightly longer and again mirrors the volatility of the fire season. Other fund and general fund increases when big fire years and decreases during smaller fire years. With regard to their packages, I just want to emphasize a couple of things. That the Coos Bay Package 351, we are asking to be withdrawn. It simply is not implementable the way it is in the governor's budget. with the Rangeland Protection Association. That is really a fund shift, primarily over to general fund, but again, will give the agency more stability. The governor's budget gives that program more stability going forward. Usual reductions. Agency has already told you their package has moved over to the emergency fund, so that's there. There is legislation that needs to go along with this budget, the forest products harvest tax. And then finally, we are requesting, if packages for the capital construction packages for the State Forester Building and the Toledo Unit facility, if those are put into the LAB, we will need to have an adjustment in the limitation for the agency budget and the capital construction budget. That's certainly something we can work with LFO on if they get into the LAB. And otherwise, I have nothing further unless you have any questions.
Any further questions? No. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to make a comment. I really want to voice my concern for the cuts for fire suppression. Lloyd's of London is the only insurance company that we have, and if we have another bad another bad fire season, I doubt very much if we can get insurance. And so I would just like to voice my concern about that.
Thank you.
So I'm going to call up first Marla Ray and Mark Webb, if possible. Hello there.
Hello there. Chair Frederick, members of the committee, my name is Marla Ray. This is the first time. By the way, you get what you ask for. I'm just warning you. It's the first time I've seen you since you got here. This is my first time that I've ever been able to check since 1981 that I drove over 150 miles to make a presentation. I retired last year, returned to my native habitat in Central Oregon. I am a volunteer, mostly with my family and neighbors in the Gateway Rangeland Fire Protection Association. Gateway is one of 22 RFPAs in Oregon, made up mostly of volunteers, farmers, ranchers in Central and Eastern Oregon. All told, about 800 volunteers protecting just over 5 million acres of private and state-owned lands from wildfires. When you include federal lands, the acreage that's within the borders of the RFPAs exceeds 14 million. In rural Oregon, as you may know, neighbors help neighbors. That's, in fact, the operating premise of RFPAs throughout the state. Oregon's system, which began in 1964, has been a model for other states, replicated in Idaho, Nevada, and other states are exploring the very same partnership. You know, or have otherwise heard about the issues that we experience on our side of the mountains with wildfires. It's a huge issue for all of Oregon. You've heard about the issues with DOF's insurance issues. It's also a mega issue for the greater sage grouse. I submitted a map that's on the subcommittee's website that shows the boundaries of the Rangeland Fire Protection Associations overlaid with a map of the sage grouse habitat. Those birds have a lot of site fidelity, and it's pretty much smack dab in Oregon within the boundaries of the Rangeland Fire Protection Associations. Within the Department of Forestry's budget, package number 314, in the larger scheme of things, is a modest one. It's a request for $650,000 in general funds to help coordinate the 22 RFPAs throughout the state, as well as helping us secure some pretty critical firefighting equipment, enhancing communications, providing safety equipment, and helping us secure federal resources. It's an absolutely critical service. Within that modest request, you get 800 volunteer firefighters looking out, as I mentioned, for about 5 million acres. Very often, the farmers and ranchers bring their own equipment, their bulldozers, their tractors, their cats, their ranch hands. More often than not, they are the first of the first responders of those fires, trying to keep those at manageable levels. So that's our pitch. Thank you for your consideration, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
I have one question. Do you know where this is? I can't tell where. We have quite a few written submissions. What is yours listed under? Do you know?
It might be listed under Marla Ray.
No, nope, I don't see.
It might be listed under Sage Grouse Map.
There it is, right there.
It might be under For a Good Time, call 475.
Marla, and Marla, I set Marla. You up for that. Thanks a lot, Marla.
Heard it here first.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. This, by the way, just so that you know, whenever I needed to make sure that I had a great interview, I would go to Marla because she was always going to give me a quote that you couldn't get from any place else.
Well, it's hard to follow that up.
That's true.
So I actually, I didn't know how many people would be here. Several individuals asked me to provide testimony as well. I know that it's we don't have the time. I'm going to summarize their testimony, briefly share what I wanted to share. And I don't know that this is appropriate, but I would personally like to address Representative Esquivel's question about the Forest Service covering their cost, because I can tell you we had to deal with that from my position as a county judge, and I would just like to provide some perspective.
And would you please introduce yourself, County Judge? Thank you.
So, Mark Webb. I'm Executive Director for Blue Mountains Forest Partners, former county judge in Grant County. Got three letters of support. One should have been emailed to you. These are from Blake Henning, Chief Conservation Officer for Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Bruce Doc Savage, President of Ochoco Lumber, King Williams with Iron Triangle Logging, and Susan Jane Brown with Western Environmental Law Center. And what I wanted to suggest here as a summary is that you've got four different perspectives, interest groups, histories with public land management in Grant County. And what's remarkable is they agree about the need to continue this support. They're fully supportive of fully funding FFRP. And when you get wildlife and conservation people, environmentalists, loggers, timber owners, the mill owners together, that says something significant about this bill that I think you need to think about. And it's when you get that kind of agreement in our county that you've got the timber harvest going up at the same time as you got landscape health increasing. Those things are traveling pairwise together. They're not pulling apart. So I'll just leave it at that with them. What I wanted to talk about briefly is Blue Mountain Forest Partners history. We started in 2006. I took office in 2007. At that point, the environmental community had effectively shut down all active management on the forest. We were getting very little volume out. People began to realize that that wasn't going to work, that status quo wasn't an option, and they began to talk with one another. And I can tell you, it was extremely difficult. It was 3 years before we even had any kind of a project out. But after that, by 2012, working with the Malheur National Forest and another collaborative south of us in Harney County, we helped the forest get a collaborative forest landscape restoration program designation. And you're talking about investments, state investments that have returns. That designation brought an additional $2.5 million annually to the Forest Service for the next 8 to 10 years for implementation, for getting work done on the ground. And that's because of our collaborative partnership with the Malheur and other individuals that included industry, loggers, community members, and environmentalists. In 2015?
I'm afraid we do have, okay. We only have 45 minutes, and I've got a number of people to try to get through. So if you can sort of wrap it up a bit.
I will summarize quickly what I think y'all need to hear. I think, frankly, FFRP, there's arguably not a better bipartisan effort to support. If your goal is to increase the health of public landscapes and the socioeconomic health of rural communities, there's not a better bipartisan effort. And if the desired condition is a more effective and efficient public land management approach that addresses and aligns these ecological needs of the landscape with the socioeconomic needs of resource-dependent natural communities, that's not going to happen short this investment.
Thank you very much. There's a pretty good presentation in the committee's system on this, so I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much, sir.
Is there a chance I could respond to the question earlier?
Do you want to?
It'll be briefly.
Go ahead.
So in Grant County, we attempted to generate money with our road fund dollars, which is pretty healthy, but Congress couldn't allow that because of the pay-go rules. So this is the situation. The Fed should be paying for this, but Congress is not allocating those monies. So for a community like ours, if Congress is not going to do that, how are we going to move forward? And these are those kind of partnerships that the state can engage in, invest in, reorient and retool this whole conversation so that everybody comes out better and you have more say in public land management. So that's the conclusion we came to that particular challenge.
Thank you very much. I'm going to call up, Jim, is it Coey? If Jim Coey could come up and Becky Heath, if she would mind coming up. Becky here? Thank you. I am going to time folks right now because we do
That's
need
fine.
To get folks.
I'll be brief.
Thank you.
My name is Jim Coy. I'm the mayor of the city of Oak Ridge. Thank you for having us today, Chair, Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt. As one of the only communities, if not the only community in the whole state of Oregon that's surrounded by national forest, you can imagine how this is sensitive to us. We were a large timber area, as you can imagine. The Middle Fork Ranger District, if it was based on just timber production, would be the sixth largest forest in the U.S. And so, again, we're surrounded by it. We've recreated ourselves, as some of you may know, as the mountain biking capital of the Northwest. So recreation is becoming pivotal for us. And without having forest restoration and forest collaboratives, which we have one, and I'm a board member of that, the Southern Willamette Forest Collaborative, we'd be in trouble. And so when a fire comes, it's terrible. And it shuts everything down, and it keeps people out of our woods and out of our town. And becomes devastating for us. Now, yes, we have firefighters in town, and they can be there for a few weeks or a month, and that helps. But, you know, our industry is based on tourism. Stewardship logging creates forest jobs as well. We have several large projects that are in planning stages. Our woods have not been touched in probably three decades. So you can imagine what kind of shape they're in. There's a lot of areas there where you can be 5 foot from a bull elk and can't even see him. So stewardship, you know, it supplies jobs through road building, extraction, slash burns, biomass, chipping, and it helps to fight our PM 2.5 issue that we have by supplying seasoned firewood for residents. collaboration is something that's new. I think we're, 2 years old, 3 years old. It's something that is really starting to step up. We have, as I said, several large projects coming up, which is going to create jobs. And the money rolls back into the community, which is the nice thing about collaboration. It doesn't all just go to D.C. and wherever that filters through. So it does help us. You know, we're at a place where we need to expand our trail system because we're getting so much demand on our existing trails. And it's hard to find the funding to be able to pay for someone to go build trails. So this is something for us that it's very vital and critical for our future. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt and committee members. For the record, my name is Becky Heath. I'm Deputy Regional Forester for the Pacific Northwest region of the Forest Service, located in Portland. I want to thank the legislature, the governor's office, and state agencies for your interest and active participation in federal forest management. Today, I'd like to focus on the impacts of ODF investment in federal forest management. When Regional Forester Jim Pena spoke to the Oregon Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee on March 13th, he outlined Forest Service internal competitive funding mechanisms that support collaborative cross-boundary management and have brought significant additional resources to the state of Oregon. We attribute much of our success in these venues to the commitment the state has made to working with us on federal forest management. You may have heard of some of these mechanisms. For example, the funding mechanisms are CFLRP, Joint Chiefs, and Cohesive Strategy. Since 2012, these competitive federal funding mechanisms have resulted in nearly $40 million of extra federal funds coming to the state of Oregon for forest restoration and beyond our base allocation and normal program of work. In fact, since Jim was here the middle of last month, we have received an additional $2.1 million to further support collaborative cross-boundary work in Oregon through some of these same mechanisms. As you can see, Oregon's commitment to collaborative solutions on federal lands has a synergistic effect. It attracts resources, and the investment continues to result in outsized returns. The state's investments also spur innovation in tangible ways and have been strategically focused to directly address bottlenecks within our restoration planning and implementation processes. Bottlenecks, examples of bottlenecks for us have been the NEPA planning part as well as the litigation. We have found, and Peter's data demonstrated earlier that he had up on the screen, that collaboration improves efficiency in our planning process. State investments have also led to earlier availability of field data in the planning process, which has allowed us to treat more acres while protecting the full range of natural resources. As I reflect on my 30-year career, and I was born and raised in Oregon, and fully half of my career has been in the state of Oregon, this notion of public involvement and how you engage the public has dramatically changed. 30 years ago, we'd write a letter and say, here's what we're going to do. 20 years ago, we started holding public meetings, and we thought about educating the public about what we were going to do. And I would say in the last 10 or 15 years, we've come to a place where we recognize that we're really partners in these efforts together, and we all have mutual interests and concern. And we sit at a table and we talk about where are our zones of agreement, where can we make considerable progress, and it's way more than just a letter informing people what we're going to do. And we realize tremendous value from that.
Can you round up this?
I'm on my last page.
Great,
yeah.
Thank you.
One of our best examples of collaboration is the Malheur story, as you heard, in eastern Oregon. In 2002, was mired in conflict and litigation and only sold 3 million board feet. And because of an increased focus investment from the Forest Service as well as the state and the collaborative and Blue Mountain Forest Partners, they are now selling 75 million board feet on the Malheur National Forest. So it's part of why I believe in collaboration. It's part of why I believe the Forest Service feels like it's successful. Thank you for the support of the Federal Forest Management Program, and I'm complete with my comments.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you. Any questions? No, you've got a chance to talk with the Forest Service. All right. I'm just checking. You know, always want to ask. I'd like to have Jim Geisinger and Nancy Hathaway come up, please. Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, Nancy.
I'm Nancy Hathaway. I'm a small woodland owner, and I bring you all greetings from the thousands of small woodland owners who are either working on their property right now or trying to get their taxes done. What I appreciate, I'm here on behalf of the stewardship foresters. What I appreciate about each one of them is the depth of knowledge that each one has beyond the boundaries of my property. And I have scattered parcels in five counties, so I've gotten to know many different ODF stewardship foresters. I may know the condition of my trees, my soil, and my stream, but they know the entire watershed system and what neighbors are doing that might influence some of my decisions. So their advice and support is invaluable, and I can't imagine doing with nine fewer stewardship foresters. I think it's important that we keep everyone, particularly now. So I have 3 points to make about that. First, we are looking at new riparian rules to be adopted by the Board of Forestry in April. The new rules will go into effect in July. This year, exactly when we need those stewardship foresters. These new rules are far removed from previous standards and are vastly more complex. For example, instead of just one percentage in a basal area, in a riparian area, there are now 3 different percentages. So we'll be out there with our tapes and our computers trying to figure this out, but we're going to need help. For small landowners who are already planning to log this summer, these complex rules will be a steep learning curve. So large and landowners might just tape off the entire riparian area and call it good. But small landowners who know every streamside tree by name will try to harvest as many as they can. They babied those trees and made sure they were free to grow. And there won't be time for the state to hold enough learning sessions. Who will be there to advise them? The timeline is really short, but the need will be urgent. My second point, the legislature has directed ODF to expand the ferns notification system. But frankly, though it's a good idea in theory, ferns is sometimes difficult to use. And 2 weeks ago, in frustration, I got in my car and drove 20 minutes to the nearest ODF office to have the ODF forester input my data. Fortunately, I called ahead, and he was there and able to help me. With a more inclusive and complicated system, there will be many more calls for help. And my third point, stewardship foresters provide the necessary link between research and on-the-ground practical application. So stewardship foresters are often the best and quickest resource for best management practices. They're like the county neighborhood coordinator. You might think extension foresters could fill the gap, but some of them are covering 2 or 3 counties. So the bottom line is, who are you going to call? Well, the stewardship forester, because he or she will be the one to cite you if you do it wrong. Please retain all ODF stewardship foresters. Family landowners need every one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Jim, good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, and members of the committee. My name is Jim Geisinger. I work for Associated Oregon Loggers here in Salem. Our association represents slightly over 1,000 small family-owned contract logging companies and other businesses associated with our industry. I'm here to offer some comments on the Federal Forest Restoration Program. We're here to support the goals of the program to increase the pace and scale of active forest management on federal lands. We do believe, however, that the program could be improved by some structural improvements to ensure accountability, transparency, and financial viability in the long term. I have 4 specific recommendations. First and foremost, we need to maintain the infrastructure, personnel infrastructure in the Oregon Department of Forestry. We cannot afford to lose 9 stewardship foresters or 30 seasonal positions. 30% of the forests in Oregon are owned by private landowners, and they're providing 75% of our timber today. We cannot jeopardize that flow of fiber to our mills for wishful thinking and hope that the federal forests will produce more than they have been in recent years. So I would urge you to keep ODF whole. Point number 2 is, if there are funds available to invest in assisting the Forest Service, we would like to see those funds prioritized in the Good Neighbor Authority. The Farm Bill was passed in 2014. Here we are in 2017, and we're just now working on the first Good Neighbor Authority project. Idaho and Wisconsin are models for this, and I would encourage the department to look at those 2 states as an example of how it might work. And in regards to that, you heard that the state is taking a systems approach to making these investments as opposed to a project approach. We would think that should be reversed. It is utterly impossible to measure the impact of state investments in managing our federal lands if it's done on a quote-unquote systems basis. Doing a little bit on everything is impossible to measure. Point number three is right to Representative Esquivel's question about are we funding the Forest Service to do what they should be doing. These funds should be going to what we call additionality, to produce benefits that would not be there under the Forest Service's normal budget. It's got to be in addition, or should be in addition, to what they have been funded by Congress to produce on these lands. And that's a key metric for success. Is it in addition to what they would have been producing? So point number four and my last one are metrics for success. And we think that those should include, is there additional saw timber being produced as a result of these investments? Are there more acres being treated as a result of these investments? Is the Forest Service improving the efficiency with which they deliver benefits from the forest as a result of these investments? And does or will the state investment leverage or incentivize the creation of additional private sector jobs in rural communities? And finally, is funding our county governments. I think all of you are well aware that the secure rural school payments are over. There is an effort underway in Congress to maybe renew it for another year or two. But right now, the counties are suffering. I started my career in Douglas County in 1976, and it's painful to read an article in the paper that they have no libraries open. That used to be one of the richest counties in the state of Oregon, all from timber revenue. And the children can't go to a library because the forest lands in Douglas County are owned by the federal government. So something needs to be changed. It needs to be changed for the better. We're committed to this program, but we want to make sure that you're getting the biggest bang for your buck possible. And we're a little bit skeptical that under the current model, whether or not you're getting that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to call up John Goodell and Peggy Lynch.
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, committee members, my name is John Goodell. I'm a wildlife biologist and the current vice president of the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. Wildlife Society is an international organization with over 10,000 members, including wildlife scientists, land managers, university professors, law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement officers, students, and more. And in Oregon, we have nearly 500 members from both public and private enterprise. This issue, the Forest Lands Restoration, Federal Forest Restoration Program, is what we're asking that you support and fully fund this program. And it's so important to us. There's a lot of issues in the biennium in the budget that we could comment on. But this dates back to the history of wildlife management. You know, in the early years of the first two-thirds of the 20th century, a lot of what wildlife science was about was basic natural history, going out, finding out what species live where, how do they reproduce, what do they eat, what habitat do they live in. And then after that, the next phase was really looking at what species are of conservation concern and how can you correct or reverse trends in population declines. And it's really more recently, it's all about implementation. Wildlife scientists and conservation leaders agree that in order to address the concerns and the issues that we have in the modern era, we have to implement large-scale, proactive restoration projects to protect wildlife, to stabilize populations of concern, to increase biodiversity, and to build resiliency into ecosystems. So there's really only a couple examples of this are out there. One of them is the sage-grouse conservation plan that looks promising. The other one is Oregon Forest Collaboratives. And the key things about both of those in the West is that they involve partnerships and collaboration. So, and that's the tough part. Also, there's a lot of details that need to be right to go from benefiting rural economies, preventing catastrophic wildfire, to really benefiting wildlife populations. And a lot of those details involve science support, in the form of this program funding a lot of science support for these collaboratives so that you can have third-party science reviews and input to make sure that these restoration programs are benefiting wildlife species and populations. And so that's really one of the most important aspects of funding this program is it'll not only accomplish the objectives of economies and fire issues, but also lends this important critical science support to these efforts. So with that, I'd just like to leave it at that. And if you have any questions for me, feel free to ask. And I thank you for your time and considerations.
Thank you very much.
Peggy. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm going to switch gears on your discussion really quickly. First of all, I want to say that the mayor of Oak Ridge was here. I helped plant some of those trees he was talking about because they have a tree planting festival every year, and when I was little, I was out there planting trees. My testimony is on OLAS, so I just want to quickly say a few things. We support stewardship foresters because they enforce the Forest Practices Act, and the help you just heard from a previous speaker about the importance to our private forests is really, really important. We also work with the Department of Land Conservation and Development around issues around development of the wildland-urban interface to reduce conflicts, and frankly, that's where I'm going to go back to in a few minutes. But that's a really important issue, and we need to make sure we cut silos as much as possible around agencies to make sure we address with both ODF and DLCD to do that. We look forward to the completion of the FERNS, the Forest Electronic Notification System. I heard the concern of the person that came before. I hope that will be a positive electronic early notification for working both for the foresters themselves, but also for the people around the forests who can then learn what's happening in their forests. Now, I'm going to switch really quickly. We have actively supported keeping the Elliott State Forest in public hands. The Department of Forestry was the contract agent that worked on that issue. They have, with the loss of that contract, dismantled most of their staffing infrastructure. But we believe that someone needs to be, if we are going to keep that forest in public hands, someone needs to manage the tree farms that are out there to actively manage and have timber jobs. So we believe that the Department of Forestry could be, again, one of those, a person or an agency to be able to do that. Then two other quick things. There was a policy option package for public funding of public benefits in our state forests. We understand the governor why the governor reduced that or took it out of the budget, but we are saddened by it. We are also saddened by the fact that she also did not address the staffing capacity to protect water quality related to forest roads and landslide prone programs. We need more revenue. Until we come together to reduce agency silos and adopt fair revenue policies and tax reforms to adequately fund services and functions in Oregon, we will continue to govern crisis by crisis, and Oregonians will lose. Thanks for listening. We're happy to answer
Thank
questions.
You very much. No questions? I see I have a state representative here. Did you plan on testifying as well?
I did, Senator.
Oh, that would be fine. Why don't you come on up and... why don't you go ahead and we'll call the other folks right after that.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Senator. You're being passed out just a portion of an update on Sudden Oak Death in Southwest Oregon. I know budgets, of course, are extremely tight. But in the ODF budget, the private forest program, which is where the Sudden Oak Death...
Representative, I need to have you... I know this is your first session here, so I make the mistake even though it's not my first. So go ahead, would you please, before you give us your name for the record.
Yes, Senator David Brocksmith, State Representative, House District 1, Charleston to Brookings Harbor, West Cave Junction, up to West Roseburg, Looking Glass, Melrose. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you briefly on the ODF's private forest program, which is where the sod eradication funds lie. What you have in front of you is, if you see the page that just has the quarantine area on it. You can see the sod quarantine area, which is about 515 square miles of Curry County. You can see the outbreaks within the Nook Bar, Windchuck, and Wilderness Retreat. There was roughly 65 outbreaks, but currently only enough resource dollars after partnering with our federal BLM and U.S. Forest Service partners to treat roughly a third of those outbreaks. And if if you turn the page over, you can see on the right-hand side, of course, this takes a view back, what the Sudden Oak Death Risk Area is. That is the red and orange areas. If you quarantine a county, you have serious problems. And it will continue to spread east by northeast and north into forested areas. I just wanted to come down and testify to you how important Oregon Department of Forestry's private forest budget is, specifically to the sod program and the necessary treatments that need to happen. If you remember, we went to the e-board last session and were successful in getting a few hundred thousand dollars, which we have convened a task force on. I was successful in getting Senator Merkley to co-convene that task force with me. We have began that work. Subcommittees meet this next week, actually, down in Southern Oregon. And we will be moving forward with a hopefully some federal resources to aggressively go after this pathogen. Lastly, what you need to know about, if you turn back to the other page that has the just the quarantine area map, in the upper left-hand corner, you have a situation that says EU1 lineage. And what that is the European strain of sod that is far more aggressive than the original, what they call NA1 lineage. And I use the term aggressive, which doesn't do it justice. So the task force is going to use the best available science to mitigate the NA1 and eradicate the EU1. But we need all the help we can. Oregon Department of Forestry multiplies the dollars that are in the private forestry account with regards to sod in the best way possible with their federal partners. And I appreciate your time and will more than willing to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Truly appreciate it. I think we've been concerned about this sudden oak death system as well. So thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Senator.
Any questions? No? Okay, we're going to move along as quickly as we possibly can, but we only have 17 minutes, and we have 12 people. So that's how that's not going to get everybody in there. Right now, I'll call forward Ed Weber and Jim James. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt. My name is Ed Weber. I'm a professor in the School of Public Policy at OSU. I'm also the chair of the Committee for Family Forest Lands, a standing committee commissioned by the Oregon Legislature to advise the state forester and the Oregon Board of Forestry on issues relevant to some 70,000 family forest land owners in the state. Today, I am here to underscore the importance of the work of ODF to family forest lands and their owners. CFF members represent all geographic areas in Oregon, as well as a wide range of private and agency interests related to family forest lands. And we as a committee stand united in our support of the department's mission and work plans. We would like to call your attention to several key issues that we think deserve attention, and I'm actually going to cut this down from what I was going to say. First, investment in the department's private forestry program. We would like to thank the body for the investment made in this program over the years. It has allowed ODF to build capacity in field-level staff and services, programs that directly affect private forest land owners, and you've just heard some examples from some of the other people testifying today. In particular, these investments provide the kind of technical assistance, information, and support services that enable family forest land owners to manage their forest lands in ways that benefit all Oregonians. We urge you to maintain a level of funding that enables the department to continue providing this needed assistance. And in particular, we focus on the stewardship forestry issue, which you have heard about. We encourage you to support the established level of funding. We simply cannot afford to lose 9 stewardship foresters. It will have great effect on the ability of private forest landowners, as you've already heard, to manage their lands effectively. The other thing that I would like to issue or to emphasize here today is the focus on wildfire and forest restoration by ODF. The CFF has long been actively engaged in departmental discussions about the best ways to provide wildfire protection and forest restoration here in Oregon. We applaud the ongoing efforts by ODF to work more closely with local fire districts, local communities, forest collaboratives, federal agencies to collaboratively approach and manage wildfire issues, including forest restoration projects. We recognize that the best approach to fire management and forest restoration is to have private and public landowners and authorities working together for the common goal of protecting forest resources from undue harm and to keep them healthy into the future. So family forest lands are the ones that are most proximate to urban areas, make up much of the urban wildland interface, and are the forests most familiar to Oregonians in the areas where we live, work, and play. Family forest land owners may have diverse goals for their lands, but many public values accrue from these lands. Family forest land owners are committed to keeping forest lands in forest. But we cannot do this alone. We need ODF as a critical, effective partner in these efforts, and we support restoration of their budget to what it used to be. We appreciate the budget. We're in tough budget times, but we would ask you to give due consideration to maintaining the level of funding so that ODF can maintain its role as an effective agency that provides benefits to all Oregonians.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yes, sir.
Okay, Chairman Frederick, Chairman Witt, my name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodland Association. You have my written testimony, and I will focus on topics that have not yet come up. I would like to start with the last sentence of my second paragraph. The public is best served if the Department of Forestry is fully funded. The department does an outstanding job of protecting forests from fire and providing the information needed by landowners to be in compliance with the Forest Practices Act. They do an outstanding job in that area, but they need to be fully funded to continue to provide those values to the state. I had the list of cuts. Peter, State Forester Doherty, mentioned those. They were in my testimony. I believe all of those need to be back into the program. And SOD was one of the good logical reasons. I would like to talk about the forest restoration program. We support that program in concept, but not at the expense of all the other private and forest operations of the Department of Forestry. I know the funding is a little bit different, but there's creative ways to make things happen. Not at the sacrifice of other things that are extremely important. The department needs to be fully funded. I would also like to talk about the Wildfire Protection Act. In 2013, the legislature passed that act. It was very timely. The 2014 fire season was outrageous. Everybody involved would agree that had that act not been implemented, that fire season would have cost considerably more. Part of that agreement, when the landowners agreed to put up $3 million of the Emergency Fire Fund dollars to help the Department of Forestry in preparedness for fire, they were also, the general fund was also provide $1 million of property tax relief to Eastside landowners. The rationale for that is still exists, and the governor's budget did not include that $1 million. I believe that's a reneg on the Wildfire Protection Act from 2013, and I would ask this committee to put those dollars back into the system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Sarah, is it Altimus Pope? Is
Yes, you did come from more than 100 miles away, and I wanted to make sure that we got you up here. And Amy Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt, members of the subcommittee. My name is Sarah Altimus Pope, and I'm the coordinator for the Southern Willamette Forest Collaborative located in Oak Ridge, Oregon, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the Federal Forest Restoration Program. Our group started 2 years ago by Oak Ridge community members who recognized an opportunity to work closer with the Willamette National Forest and to get more work done in the forests that surround our rural community. In 2016, funding from the Oregon Department of Forestry helped us to increase our organizational capacity by funding facilitation and monitoring. State investments are important and create a multiplier effect through collaborative outcomes. Stewardship contracting allows the Forest Service to keep timber receipts for additional restoration work and award contracts for best value and prioritize the local workforce. Our stewardship committee brought together 30 participants representing a dozen organizations for field trips, workshops, and roundtable discussions. When implemented, these projects should create $350,000 in retained receipts that can be used for restoration work across the watershed and prioritizing local workforce. In addition, we worked with the University of Oregon to analyze the local timber and restoration economy to understand the impacts of stewardship contracting going forward. The local impacts of state investments go beyond just the work of our collaborative group. The Willamette National Forest receives state federal implementation partnership funding from ODF, which funded 7 ODF seasonal positions to work on our district, conducting fish and road surveys, stream mapping, and timber cell prep, which accelerated 25.5 million board feet of timber 6 months ahead of schedule and increased the annual timber target by 10 million board feet. With continued support for the Federal Forest Health Program, groups such as ours can continue to increase the pace and scale of restoration across the state, such as our current work on the 100,000-acre Rigdon Dry Forest Restoration Project to restore old-growth mixed conifer forests to protect against climate change and resume natural fire regimes. And I'll just go ahead and close now, but I want to invite you. My organization is working with Representative Powers' office to have a field trip on May 5th, and you can come out and see some of the work we're doing and some of our stewardship areas. So please consider joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Nice.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Amy Patrick, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Mr. Ken Cummings, who's the chair of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. However, he is in Eastern Oregon, unable to be here today. So in the essence of time, and to give his testimony its full due, if there is going to be another day of testimony, I'd be willing to go ahead and waive that until that time frame.
We will be trying to do that. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up... I'm not sure who this is. I'm trying to pronounce
Christina McNitt.
Christina McNitt. She's here. Why am I not reading your handwriting well? And Jim James. Already did. I've got. No. It says Jim James for Lyle DeFreeze. That's what was. Yeah. Never mind. Oh, you're going to... why don't we hold off a little bit there? Thank you very much. Who's Bob Van Dyke? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Frederick and Witt and members of the committee. For the record, Christina McNitt with the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. We're a trade association representing manufacturing and large landowners. This week you've heard a lot about the important work done by the Oregon Department of Forestry in a number of different areas. And I'll say from the outset, right up front, that it's work we generally support. However, unlike the relative ease of the past two biennia, budgets in this legislative session are predicated on cuts, which we believe appropriately drives your decisions in this body about which functions are nice versus which functions are necessary. ODF is unique among the 14 natural resource agencies in that its partnership with the private landowner community is inextricably linked to two of the three core agency programs, fire protection and private forests. This link is both financial through significant landowner assessments, charges, taxes, and real manpower provided through in-kind company employees, heavy equipment, and operators. Landowners actually fund 40% of the agency's administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act, and we're significantly more than equal funding partners in fire protection. So stated another way, your general fund cuts to these programs result in disproportionate impacts to the agency, as landowner match formulas also reduce the agency revenues from our side of the ledger. It's difficult to talk about this when the department has 2.5 days and we have 3 minutes, so I hope that you'll indulge me. The governor's recommended budget includes some policy choices that are misaligned with the priorities of the agency and its co-funders, the landowners. My testimony is meant to provide the rest of the story as an equal contributor with the state in making investments in the success of ODF. The GRB general fund reduction of $437,000 in fire protection results in loss of matching dollars from public and private landowners of $888,554. This translates into a reduction of 10 FTE seasonal positions, which may not seem tremendous until you realize these quote-unquote full-time equivalent positions are actually 33 seasonal frontline initial attack employees across the state. This is core, basic, bread-and-butter priority program work for ODF. OFIC recommends full restoration of the fire program general fund resources. I have a number of questions that I'd like you to consider, and I'll forego them right now and visit with you individually in your office. The GRB also includes a departure from long practice of not charging fire agency administrative costs to landowners in recognition of the value of in-kind resources brought to the table by those landowners. On an annual basis, the value of these in-kind contributions exceeds $13 million, an amount far in excess of ODF's administrative charges. And a failure to recognize these resources, of which ODF never would be able to provide on its own, is a gross departure from the agency-landowner partnership in delivering a complete and coordinated fire protection program. OFIC supports full recognition of landowner contributions towards administrative costs. Private forest program, landowners pay 40% of the administration. This is done through the Forest Products Harvest Tax. The Forest Practices Act is not a statutory framework to assist the landowners in harvesting trees. Rather, it's a regulatory structure to protect public environmental resource values found on private property, including rivers and streams, wildlife and their habitat, clean air and water, to name a few. These ecosystem services are provided free to the public through regulations like streamside buffers left by landowners. Landowners support funding of the Oregon Forest Practices Act because Oregonians are generally not foresters, and they have no idea of the level of professional expertise required by foresters, hydrologists, Dana, biologists.
How close? We need for you to wrap up so that we
Let me get to the money slide. So the general fund reduction of $3,013,947 in general fund results in a loss of $972,075 in other funds, harvest tax, to the department. These impacts include reductions of an elimination of the stewardship foresters, which you've heard. They also play in the fire militia. I will follow up with all of you with specific questions for the department. I'm really concerned that we're gutting core programs in favor of adding new programs that are good programs and have merit. But I think in a cuts reduction scenario, we need to make sure that we're prioritizing necessities over niceties. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Bob Van Dyke, Wild Salmon Center co-chairs, thank you for the time to speak today. We are an Oregon-based conservation organization that promotes conservation and sustainable use of wild salmon ecosystems across the Pacific Rim. I'll try to be short and to the point because I know our time's just about out.
Just about. Keep going. Quickly.
There's a lot of controversy right now about the Forest Practices Act, how it's implemented. There are concerns about aerial spraying. There's been a variety of bills. There's been threatened ballot measures. I agree with Ms. McNitt that cutting 10 positions of technical staff in the Salem office, those are people who in part are in charge of adaptive management. They're the ones who are supposed to be doing studies and giving us confidence that the Forest Management Forest Practice Act is changing and adapting over time and following science. So at a time when there's that controversy out there, if there's not going to be a fundamental reform of the law, which I don't think there will be, I think we need to prioritize that technical capacity to keep addressing issues like roads and landslides. Secondly, I just want to flag for you the State Forest Program. I was struck by State Forester Doherty. He presented in his slides that the state forest revenues generated from the Clatsop and Tillamook, the Board of Forest and Lands, are the highest ever. Okay, so this is a familiar story. They're the highest ever, and they're cutting their program. So there's some kind of basic fundamental problem there, and it's related in part, of course, to public employee costs that we're all aware of. But if we're going to keep providing the services from those forests, we need to find another path forward. And the one thing I'd like to note is Washington County, where I happen to live, there's 580,000 people now in Washington County, and it's going to keep growing. There's 50,000 acres of state forest in that county. It's a very popular recreation location. The department's spending $5 million on recreation. So maybe that's the piece where we need the public as a whole to somehow come forward and share and help stabilize the department. So thank you for the chance to speak today.
I'm sorry. I just have to say that this is probably the first time Bob Van Dyke and I have, like, had common cause on a witness stand, and we might want to take a selfie.
Well, there you go. Might want to take a selfie. We have come to that. thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to say, first of all, that I apologize to Ralph Saperstein, Tom Wolf, Mark Stern, Dylan Cruz, and Kirk Shamil, but we did run out of time, and I will hope that you, when we make a decision on when this public testimony will continue, that you'll come back and speak. I'm pretty sure there are a couple of you who would be here anyway, but we do need to have you here. So thank you very much, and I'm going to close this particular session, close the hearing of 5519. And close the hearing, the Subcommittee on Natural Resources.
We have a meeting next.
Subcommittee on Natural Resources.
We have a meeting.